For 6 months now, on Saturdays, there's been a march that's taken place in London of pro-Palestine supporters. These have been very controversial marches after the previous Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, labelled them hate marches. And this was something that ultimately ended up with her being fired. Now, many members of Parliament have told us that these are not hate marches and that these are friendly and that Jews can freely attend them. Now, just the other day, Gideon Falter, who's the head of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, had gone to synagogue, was walking home wearing his kippah and with a little bag carrying, I think, one of his wraps in it, which I think had a Star of David on, and proceeded to walk home. The path of the march changes every Saturday, and he found that his walk home on Saturday was interrupted by the march. He wanted to proceed and cross the march, but the police stopped him. And they stopped him on the grounds that he was very openly Jewish, or clearly openly Jewish. Now, this has been hugely controversial, and we have a bit of video on it. But Matthew, I wanted to just ask you, what was your first reaction in upon seeing this and hearing about this?
Well, I'm loath to criticize the police because I know they've got a very difficult job sort of trying to police all these marches, but what the police officer says to him, essentially he's singling him out for being Jewish. She seems to be saying that he's causing a problem simply by his presence as a Jew being there, that that's going to somehow antagonize the protesters. But he then, and I imagine this is going to be shown in the video clip, the police officer actually threatens to place him under arrest for what we call a breach of the peace. Now, in England, and I know, Morgan, you're in Scotland, and breach of the peace in Scotland means something completely different. It's much more serious than in England. In England, a breach of the peace is simply, really, it's a mechanism for when the police believe there's a potential for some sort of problem, some kind of small scale public disorder, and it's a mechanism that allows them to temporarily arrest people, move them out of the area to prevent things escalating, and then, unless evidence of some other criminal offence comes to light, they're simply be arrested and let go once they're away from the situation. But the criteria for a breach of the peace is there has to be an act being done or being threatened which either actually causes harm to a person or in his presence causes harm to his property or is likely to cause such harm to be done. Now, from what we see in the video clips, Mr. Falter is not threatening anybody. He is simply there, and the reason given is simply that his presence there as an open Jew, is likely to antagonize some of the protesters. And I don't see how that can constitute a breach of the peace. And I've just had a message from Daniel suggesting we play the video, but yeah, that's probably quite right. We should view it first.
Sure, so let's go with that, Daniel.
You are quite openly Jewish. This is a pro-Palestinian march. I'm not accusing you of anything, but I'm worried about the reaction to you. You've been escorted out of this area so you can go about your business, go where you like freely, or if you choose to remain here because you are called the breach of peace, you will lose other people.
If I remain here, you will arrest me.
Because your presence here is antagonizing a large group of people, and we can't deal with all of them. If they attack you, or they did, because your presence is antagonizing.
Taxi!
Before you get arrested.
Watching your movement. That's right. That's right. We're all gonna watch your movement and report you. Wait, no. The police ain't gonna help you in this scenario.
Yeah. So there you go. That's just a slightly clipped version. I think so. The bit that's attracted the attention is what the first police officer that's shown says to him. And before I go on to criticize them, I think the police clearly aren't intending to be malicious. The guy who's saying at the beginning is coming across all very English and apologetic, right? But certainly the second police officer you see is very openly threatening to arrest him and moving him along, basically, as you were saying, Matthew. And I appreciate the police have a very difficult job in a sense with these marches, but it seems to me that I kind of, as you were saying, this is completely getting off with the wrong orientation, because he's making a potential breach of the peace merely by his presence, which is a tacit admission of what the members of parliament and various activists have been denying all along, which is that these are very anti-Semitic marches. Because why would him being openly Jewish breach the peace or be an incitement to these people in any way? And also, there's a bit of an unsavory suggestion which at least stood out to me when I first saw it, which was, he's wearing his kippah and he's holding his whatever. But almost there was almost something like they can see it in your face was how it came across the first time I heard it. The suggestion that not only is he Jewish for religious reasons, but almost kind of racial Jewishness, which I thought was a really unsavory connotation. But I mean, and Matthew, so you're the lawyer here. Would it not be right in a sense that the person who needs to be protected by the police, which you could argue is what they were doing, is him? Whereas, in a sense, what they're doing is they're protecting the protesters from him rather than the other way around. And so, although the police are probably there understaffed or undermanned to be able to do this, the police would have to, presumably, if they really thought the threat was emanating from the crowd, have to stop them. They wouldn't have to stop him, if that makes sense.
Well, I would have thought that's certainly how it ought to work, because we get at the end of the clip that was played. There's, I appreciate it's edited, but the you can hear several of the protesters actually being quite abusive and threatening towards him. So I would say, yeah, absolutely, he's the one who needs protecting, not anyone else.
Yes, and I mean, the police seem a bit, I mean, as I say, they undermanned and they seem a bit intimidated, because when one of them shouting Nazi scum or whatever they say, the lady officer sort of shoves him away and says, "Go away before you get arrested." And if they're undermanned in those situations to deal with those kind of things, then presumably what that should indicate to the Met is that these marches do have a meaningful element of danger in them, which they need to send more police officers to, and probably shouldn't allow to go ahead in the first place. Because if there's a average Londoner going about their day who will be intimidated, threatened, potentially attacked by the crowd, then it's the crowd who are breaching the peace. It isn't just the average Londoner, surely. Now, Daniel, can we just pull up the image of the first apology that the Metropolitan Police issued? Because, and for everyone, they issued two.
Yeah,
So.
they issued one, this one, which is appallingly badly worded, as far as I'm concerned, and it caused a massive uproar on Twitter, or X, as it's now called, I should say. And they ended up, well, we'll come to the second apology in a moment, but they are here clearly suggesting, where is it? The
So let's, I'll just read.
fourth paragraph down. In recent weeks, we've seen a new trend emerge, with those opposed to the main protests appearing along the route to express their views, and the fact that they often film themselves doing this suggests they know their presence is provocative, and that they're inviting a response, and that they are increasing the likelihood of an altercation. Which, well, one presumes that he was there to, try to film them and effectively counter protest, which he has made clear certainly was not his intention. He has, as you said, he has explained he had just left the synagogue and he's on his way home. But Second of all, is essentially suggesting that those who counter protest in favor, presumably in favor of Israel, are causing a problem by increasing the likelihood of an altercation. So they're not even being even handed in how they're sort of analyzing the situation.
Yes, I agree. And in the second paragraph, they apologize for the officer using the term openly Jewish. Yeah. And they say that it's a poor choice of words. Now, that is a poor choice of words. However, that is the really minor element of the whole thing, I think. And it sort of goes over their head a little bit. And I agree, there's something insulting by suggesting, because the suggestion that he was there to counter protest is almost kind of saying, look, he was here to stir things up a bit, when very clearly he wasn't. And actually, in his interaction with the officers, he wasn't doing any such thing. And actually, I would have to think, even if he were there to counter protest, counter protests are things which do happen in this country. So surely the police, under, you know, whatever protections for protests there are, would need to just sort of allow to facilitate that. And again, if they're undermanned in order to do it because they think it might be dangerous, again, that says something about what these kind of marches are and what these kind of protests are. So as we say, this they had to then issue an apology, a kind of revised apology for the initial event, and then apologize for this one. So if we can pull up
they apologize for most of the content of this one in the
Daniel, can we pull up the second one? So there we go. So this one, the use of the term openly Jewish by one of our officers is hugely regrettable. We know it will have caused offense to many. We reiterate our apology. We've reflected on the strength of the response to our previous statement in an effort to make a point about the policing of protests. We caused further offense. This was never our intention. We've removed that statement and we apologize. Being Jewish is not a provocation. Jewish Londoners must be able to feel safe in this city. Our commitment to protecting the public extends to all communities across London. It's important that our public statements reflect that more clearly than they did today. And so Gideon Fawcett, when he released the video we just watched, is kind of clipped from a video that he released of it. And it's kind of his video is interspersed with clips of him explaining the context that he was going to synagogue. But then he's also talking about what it's felt like to be a Jewish Londoner for the last 6 months. And it's broadly reflective of a lot of the stuff that we've heard, which the pro-Palestinian side has basically said is being hysterical, is being overstated. There's no threat to you at all. And it's saying that it's been extremely uncomfortable because one of the debates, which it's, what's the name? Not revivified, it resurrected, is the idea of there being no-go zones in London. Now that refers primarily to communities, but there's been partly this idea that our Saturdays along the area where the marches are, no-go zones for Jews in London. And in effect, what the police were enforcing was kind of that idea. Because even though he wasn't there to counter-protest, and he wasn't there to make a nuisance of himself or to breach the peace in any way, he was merely there by just existing there was a kind of provocation. And it's a comically, ridiculously English apology upon an apology that they have to issue. Now, Matthew, under the existing legislation, is what they did the right thing? Because ultimately, I think it's wrong morally, but are they in breach in a sense of their own guidelines, like, so to speak?
If they had placed him under arrest for breach of the peace, which it sounds like they didn't actually end up doing, from what we have seen, and I appreciate we have to bear in mind it is a sort of edited video clip, but from what we have seen, I don't see how he was doing anything that would have constituted a breach of the peace. So had they in fact arrested him, I would have said that was on the face of it potentially subject to there being any more to it that we're not seeing in the footage. I have to put that caveat in. I would have thought that would have been an unlawful arrest potentially.
And as I say, I don't know that the police were being intentionally malicious in any way in what they were doing. It almost seems to belie the attitude, which I think is what people have been suggesting, which is that they don't really get it. They don't really see what the problem is. And I don't think it's a product of what sometimes happens in these situations, which is their sympathies kind of lie with the protesters, so they're kind of defaulting to protecting them. But that in effect is what they're doing. And what they're protecting is anti-Semitism. And in those two examples there, I think that's very clearly what you see. The initial guy who's calling him Nazi scum, and then the guy who's saying that he'll watch him, which I guess is a suitably vague enough phrase that they don't seem to do anything about it, although there's enough
Well,
support.
in that context, I would say it's pretty clearly meant as a threat, isn't it?
Well, I would agree. Again, I don't know exactly how it fit into the a legal category, but it's very menacing is what he's being. But the officer, the first guy, the lady pushes him away and says, "Go away before you get arrested." But with the second guy, there's just an officer stood there, kind of shaking his head, just kind of letting him say that. And also the implication of as well, and this maybe would fall under harassment or something, of "I'm going to watch your movements." It almost sounds like he's going to follow him away from this. It's kind of how it sounded to me the first time. And unfortunately, Jews in Britain, but particularly Jews in London, with these marches going on, as I say, have complained that it doesn't feel very safe to be in London. Now, as a result of this, Gideon Falter has planned a kind of counter walk to these kind of things. I can't remember. I don't know if it's happening, I think today maybe, or in the next few
I think
days.
it's next Saturday, 20, yeah, the 27th.
Yeah. So the campaign against anti-Semitism, and then a bunch of other people I've seen, Bella Wallerstein, I think is her name, who I saw on Twitter, and other pro-Israel people are going to stage a walk through London and say, no, it's completely justified for us to be here. And I haven't seen too much of the public reaction to this yet, aside from just people responding on Twitter. But I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, Matthew, but I'm surprised in a way that I haven't seen more politicians reacting to this. And I'd like to see the politicians who are downplaying the threat from these marches having to account for what just happened there. Because, I mean, sure, if we're a country that still believes in any way in individual rights, it's Gideon Falter who needs to be protected in that situation. There's a there's a
Precisely,
there's
precisely.
a there's a braying mob, in effect, who are going to attack him, and it's them who are being protected from him. Whereas, if he wants to cross that road, then what the police would have to do is really kind of form a shield around him and take him across. Now, whether if there just weren't enough people there, that just means they're not taking the threat seriously enough. And then the recognition that there's a threat there, I think surely would mean they'd have to stop the protests from going ahead in the future. Except that would cause a whole political scandal. No doubt the Met would be called facilitators of genocide and all this typical kind of stuff, right? So we're in a real situation in this country. But I mean, Matthew, have you seen any reaction to this from any politicians?
But to make a brief other point, I think to be fair to the police officers involved in the incident, Gideon Falter has actually said, and I'm paraphrasing, he has no sort of animosity towards them because he appreciates that they're trying to apply whatever sort of guidance they're getting from up top. Insofar as I have seen any political reaction, and I don't think it's getting particularly wide coverage, it has been to sort of make the point that simply being Jewish, shouldn't be treated as a sort of threat to people, and that essentially he shouldn't have been treated in the way that he was.
So, and Bonnie's saying you really get the sense that that particular officer was trying to protect the Jewish man. I take if you mean the first officer, yes, I think you do, in the sense that, again, he's coming across all English and very apologetic about it. But I think that you still have to look at what his, no matter what his intention may have been, even if he was genuinely wishing to act in Gideon Falter's interests in some way. what he's still doing, it amounts to treating Gideon Falter as if he's the criminal in this situation, or a potential criminal. And certainly the second officer is much less apologetic in his actions, and is being much more forthright in saying, I will arrest you and I'll move you on. And so, Matthew, do you think this is going to change the Metropolitan Police's behavior? Because they've issued these apologies, right? And they've issued the apology on their apology. But do you think this will change how things go at these marches from now on? Because I would presume as a result of this, we will see potentially much more active counter-protests at them, which the police are presumably going to have to facilitate. But also, do you think there'll be any recognition that there's actually something wrong with these marches?
Well, from what I've seen, it's actually being suggested that the march that happened today had a much more significant counter-protest than has been the case in previous weeks. But I think we do need to bear in mind the police, in trying to sort of police these marches, at the end of the day, they're taking orders from the top. They're, you know, the policy's being decided by the mayor and the commissioner at the end of the day. And part of the argument Suella Braverman got herself into back in November is that under the Public Order Act, there is actually a power to prevent a march from taking place. You can still have a sort of static protest like in one area, but there is a power to ban a moving sort of procession. But the request for that has to come from the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. The Home Secretary can't simply do it on their own initiative. They have to have the way the legislation set out, the request from the police has to come first. And Suella Braverman, I think, was pretty strongly hinting, or certainly my reading of it is, she was pretty strongly hinting that if such a request was to be made, that she was going to grant it. And the context of that, particularly, that it was is that it was Remembrance Weekend, and there was concern, particularly that weekend, that the protests would tend to sort of disrespect, you know, what was going on, the sort of remembrance ceremonies and so forth. So there is that power there. Whether it would actually be used, I don't know. But I think Ayn Rand, for what it's worth, she was asked, I think the context was a sort of neo-Nazi group wanting to march in New York back in the, I can't remember, either the late 60s or early 70s. And her take on it was that in an objectivist society, there actually would be no automatic right to have a march down public roads. Public roads are there for people who are travelling and are trying to get to wherever it is they want to go, and there is no right to protest in a way that disrupts travellers and sort of blocking the roads and so forth. But she does say that if you are going to allow marches by one group, you would then have to sort of be even-handed and, you know, between different potentially rival groups, you'd have to let everyone march and be even-handed in how you were policing it. But how you even start to apply that to the current situation, I don't know.
Yes, I think that was in Illinois. The town's called, is it Spokane or Spokane, something like that, which was favored by Holocaust survivor retirees, and which is why the neo-Nazis targeted it just charmingly. And yes, I remember it the same way that you just did, in the sense that she said that per se she doesn't think there is a right to protest. But once you've allowed it, you have to allow it to all these groups. Now, I think that's right, and I think the British government does, in a sense, have to facilitate protest coming from any quarter. But there's such a leniency with these protests in a way that I don't know would necessarily be shown with others. In the sense that what this video shows is a real threat coming from them, and that they are the ones who are going very meaningfully breaching the peace. And yet, my suspicion is that nothing will change as a result of this. Perhaps the Met Police will provide greater manpower once they're there, but there won't be any action taken to stop them. And I don't mean to stop them just because, in a sense, I disagree with their perspective very significantly, but because Jewish Londoners have been vindicated, that they have a meaningful cause to feel unsafe. Now we just have a few more super chats. So we have $4 and $2 from Jonathan Honig. Thank you very much, Jonathan, who says thank you to ARC UK for being a moral voice. Thank you, Jonathan. And then we have $1 from Bonnie. Thank you so much, Bonnie. Oh, and then Jonathan said $5 and says, shameless plug, Can You Really Love a Dog? Leonard Peikoff and Ayn Rand on Pets is available on Amazon. Never before seen photos of Miss Rand. There we go. So that's Jonathan's new book with Leonard Peikoff. And then Bonnie, who's been a member for 23 months, thank you so much, says, Matthew, today the police were using barricades. Was this happening on the day Falter was talked to? Not that I can see in the video. Do you know about that, Matthew?
I don't. I imagine the barricades today would have been because well, as I said a couple of minutes ago, it is being reported that there was a much more substantial counter protest than has happened in previous weeks. I mean, whether that is because of what's happened with Mr. Falter, I don't know. But I imagine if there were greater numbers on the other side, the barricades would have been to try and keep the two protests apart.
And I think, as appalling as this is, and no doubt this has got some sympathy, not just from the pro-Israel crowd, but from a wider spread of the population. I suspect, unfortunately, this is going to change pretty much nothing, in the sense that these marches will still go on, Jewish Londoners will still feel threatened, but nothing is going to be done really about that. And I think that the people who were previously saying that worries about anti-Semitism in the UK, which I think are very clear, should very clearly be worried about. And I think this video is just real further evidence that those worries are vindicated. I suspect those people will continue saying that this is overblown, hysterical. These were just two people. The Met was just being heavy-handed, whatever. I think they'll just rationalize it away completely because it's too damaging to them to acknowledge that the people on the marches are anti-Semitic. There was a select committee hearing a few months ago where Diane Abbott was speaking to members of the Jewish community from some organization. I can't remember the name of. Gideon Falter may even have been there, but that's probably me just forcing that memory. And she's telling them that, look, there are Jewish people on these marches. You have nothing to worry about. Very clearly, you have things to worry about. And then also the journalists who are poo-pooing the idea that these are hate marches or that there's something wrong with them. I mean, hate marches is a little bit of a vague term. But the people who are saying that there's nothing to worry about these marches, there's real evidence here that they're completely wrong. And I doubt they're going to revise their opinion. Okay, but we're just running a bit over time. Any final comments, Matthew?
I don't think I've got anything to add, to be honest. I think I mean, I agree with the concern you've just expressed. Certainly, I think you're absolutely right.
So a bit of a down note, I'm afraid, folks. But look, this isn't even just the UK. The Western world in general had really needs to face up to this problem of anti-Semitism and what they're going to do about it. And in terms of your policing, if there's a Jewish person who wishes to go about their daily business, they aren't breaching the peace, they aren't doing anything that could reasonably be faulted as in a way incitement or a criminal act. And if the police persecute them in any way, merely for being Jewish or being openly Jewish. I mean, actually, this actually brings me to something, Matthew, because You actually had some experiences where people shouted "Free Palestine" at you because you were wearing a suit and a hat. And they basically, I guess, assumed from afar that you looked like a Hasidic Jew because you were dressed quite formally, right?
Well, I assume so. I mean, I think people know I'm a lawyer, so I am often, certainly in the week, I am often walking around in sort of a quite dark tailored suits because that's what I wear to court, particularly. And when the weather gets rough, I have a sort of overcoat and a fedora I wear just to shield from the rain and cold, really. And yeah, exactly as you say, you've heard the story before. It's happened to me two or three times since the whole thing began in October, and the only reason I can think is because they think I'm a Hasidic Jew or whatever, and that I'm automatically must be an Israel supporter. Of course, it happens I am generally an Israel supporter without being a Hasidic Jew, but there we are.
Yes. Well, perhaps your presence at these protests would also be judged as a breach of the peace. Who knows, basically. But this is, I mean, this is something which I think is going to continue getting attention over the next few days, and people and will be paying attention to it. And although, as I say, unfortunately, I don't think much is gonna, not much good stuff is going to come of this. But we'll wrap up. Thank you very much for watching, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with the Daily Objective and the Reality Show Extra, where on the Reality Show Extra, we'll be looking at the OJ Simpson trial. That'll be with me, James. I think Matthew, I think you're joining us as well.
Yes, well, I was asked to do it last week, and we ended up not we ended up cancelling because of what had happened with Iran launching it to Israel, I think. But yeah, I can do it tomorrow, certainly.
Yes, so we've been rescheduled. I hope we'll see you all there. So we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.